Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on day one of our circuit break lockdown. I would like to focus today on our vaccination programme. When I spoke with you at the start of this week, I talked about the priorities of the Council of Ministers when we talked about making decisions. Clearly, the number one priority is the protection of human life, the lives of our people. This is front and centre in all our decision making. It was when we locked down last time, and it is again this time. Last time, it was difficult to see any light at the end of the tunnel. This time, there is an important difference. We have two vaccines that have been approved by regulators and to which we have access here on our island. The rollout of the vaccine has now to be our national priority. We will do everything in our power to ensure that this happens as quickly and effectively as possible. In a second, I will hand over to the Minister for Health and Social Care, who will take us through this detail in the details of the plan for the rollout of the vaccine and the current state of play. The Minister will also update us on today's testing figures. But just before he does, I do have to touch on some important points. Now, this is not simply a matter of lining people up and sticking a needle in their arm. There are some real challenges relating to storing, handling and deploying the current vaccine. Some of these are logistical, but there are also regulatory and legal issues that are important. We need to get the balance absolutely right. The categories for our vaccine rollout are published on our website. We, of course, want all of this to go as speedily as possible to protect as many people as possible. There is a plan for rollout based on some clearly defined categories. This plan was based on solid clinical advice, and we believe this is the right approach. Let me hand you over now to the Minister to take you through some of this. David.
Thank you, Chief Minister. If I could first of all turn to the figures for today. The total tests undertaken now stands at 22,984. The number of tests that have been undertaken in the previous 24 hours is 345. Our total confirmed cases stands at 390, which is one new case since yesterday, and that case is a day one test from a returning resident. That means that we have active cases of 16, one of which remains in hospital. Turning now to our vaccination programme, and as the Chief Minister said, I'd like to give a longer form update on the vaccination programme and explain a bit more about it. So as people will be aware, our vaccination programme is both a national priority and a priority for the Department of Health and Social Care. I can confirm that the vaccination programme is on schedule as per our timescales and plans, and this week has seen 1,141 individuals vaccinated in the first priority group. This is an increased number from the expected 975, as like other jurisdictions, we have found we can get 6 doses out of a vial rather than the expected 5. We will be continuing over the next week vaccinating 1,141 per week over 3 days. Now, some may ask, why 3 days, not 7? The decision has been taken to do the 1,141 over 3 days of vaccination rather than spreading the 1,141 over 7 days. We have also to remember that this is a medical procedure. It is not a production line. There are medical protocols and procedures that must be adhered to. This is a brand new vaccine, and it is important that we ensure that operating practices are correct and that we deliver this in a safe way. That means we are learning on the ground as we go. That means we must constantly assess and change our protocols based on the actual experience of the rollout itself, ensuring patient safety at all time. The Pfizer vaccine is a very complex vaccine. In fact, some have said to me that it's the most complex that has ever had to be handled in this way. It is therefore essential that it is handled with care in line with the manufacturer's recommendations and clinical guidance. Those receiving the vaccine would expect nothing else. We have to remember at the moment we are only using the Pfizer vaccine, which logistically is much more challenging. From the process of defrosting the trays, having to use an entire tray at a time because they can't be split, the storage requirements, and even the mixing requirements all mean the care must be taken. Once the Oxford vaccine comes on stream, we will be able to scale up further as there are less logistical challenges with that vaccine. We also have to remember that the vaccines are a two-dose vaccine, and it is important that we ensure at all times we have adequate stock in storage in our possession to ensure that we can deliver the second dose when it is medically appropriate to do so, and not find we do not hold the stock to deliver people those crucial second doses, which is something I will come back to and touch on shortly. It is also important for people to remember we receive our vaccine as a per head of population basis from the UK. As with other countries, we will receive our stock in staggered deliveries over the next 9 months. It is important to remember we do not receive all of our entitlement at once. In terms of timescales, I can confirm we are currently on course as planned to have vaccinated everyone in the 50s and above categories by the end of May, with the rest of the below 50 population vaccinated by the end of September. And that's also in line with the delivery schedules that we will be receiving the vaccines. I can also confirm that we have now received our first tray of Oxford vaccine. However, we have not yet received the Crown Indemnity or the protocols around use and delivery from the UK that are required in order to administer the vaccine. We hope that these will be imminent, after which, once the protocols are clinically approved, we can start rolling out this second vaccine, which is much more mobile than the first, with our priority for its use being care home residents. Another query I know some of our media friends and some of the wider general public as well are interested in is I can confirm that we will be sticking with the manufacturer's guidance in relation to the second doses of the vaccines. So I can confirm that with the Pfizer vaccine, the second doses will be delivered 21 days after the first, and in relation to Oxford, the second dose will be 28 days after the first. Our manufacturer indemnity requires us to work to the manufacturer's recommendations, and after review by our clinical teams, it is the view of our clinical body that this is also the correct thing to do from a medical point of view. I know there have been many questions from people around where they fall in the vaccination programme, particularly those in other key working groups other than health and social care settings. As with all vaccination programmes, we follow the guidance of the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, which is the professional body with the appropriate clinical experience to make guidance and recommendations around the priority groups for vaccine rollout. When it becomes your turn for the vaccine, you will receive a letter to be invited to come and be vaccinated. Please be patient. It is important that we do this in a controlled and ordered manner. To be clear, the vaccination programme is designed to protect those most likely to suffer serious effects or life-threatening effects of COVID-19 first. That is why it is essential we continue to roll out the vaccine in population cohort group order. The vaccination programme priority grouping is not based around if you're likely to contract COVID, but on who would suffer the most serious or life-threatening effects should they contract it. Once again, to confirm, based on the current rollout, all those aged 50 and above and those in the most vulnerable categories are expected to have been offered the opportunity to have a vaccine by the end of May if our delivery schedules hold up as we expect they will. It will then be rolled out across the rest of the population from May to September in line with our delivery schedules. I emphasise again that we will be sticking to the priority groupings and that people will be written to and invited when it is their turn. Can I also take the opportunity to publicly thank all those involved in the vaccination rollout? This is one of the biggest logistical challenges we have ever faced and is the biggest vaccination programme in human history. So thank you to everyone involved and also to all those who have come forward to offer to help. The letters for the over 80s category, inviting them to come for their vaccination, will start going out tomorrow. At this point, only those who can make their way to Nobles are being invited. Further information will be sent to those that fall into this category and that are housebound shortly. If you fall into this category, can I ask that you wait until receiving your letter before calling 111 to try and arrange an appointment? The letter will be on its way. Another question that has been raised is around patient transfers. I have explained at this podium before that this is not as simple as it may appear, with the vaccine for effective efficacy required to be a two-dose vaccine delivered days apart. Also, immunity is not instant. It takes several days after vaccination to develop both after the first and second doses. DHSC has been working on the logistics of how we vaccinate patient transfers, and I can announce that for all those patients who are travelling to the UK in the next 6 to 8 weeks initially, that already know of an appointment, with immediate effect, consultants who make a referral to the UK and agree a patient transfer will now also be able to organise for the patient to be referred for a vaccine at the same time as the patient transfer referral is made. Once this is done, patients will be advised and can book their vaccine. It is important to stress that this needs to be clinically led and a clinical decision, as not all patients may, due to their condition, be able to have the vaccine. A couple of other areas I want to touch on, if I may, Chief Minister. Firstly, elective surgery. People will remember that we suspended elective surgery for a two-day period in order to preserve bed capacity at Nobles. This was reviewed clinically last night, and it has been operationally decided to extend the suspension for a further 7 days. At the moment, the situation around any potential wider community spread of COVID-19, while looking optimistic, is still unknown. So at a time when the hospital is dealing with the normal annual winter pressures, it is important we still ensure that bed capacity is there should we need it. I thank people for their patience on this. Also, the operational decision has been taken to suspend respite and day services for 7 days. These services deal with individuals who are high risk to the virus exposure and also are some of the most vulnerable people in our society in settings where social distancing is impractical and impossible to police. There will be exceptions based on clinical judgment around cases where the lack of service provision would bring about severe detriment. At a time when we are still not certain around the possible transmission in the community, it is important we do all that we can to protect those individuals from any virus contraction. I need to be clear, we wish to keep this disruption to service users and families to a minimum. And unlike the last lockdown, this is for 7 days only at this time. And if the situation remains the same around community cases, then we will look to reopen services in 7 days. Thank you, Chief Minister.
And thank you very much, David. And it's great to hear the progress so far and that we are ready for the next steps. And thank you to everyone working so hard on the vaccination programme. As you heard from the Minister, there has been a large number of tests, and I would like to pass on my thanks to the swabbing team and colleagues in the lab who have made this possible. It is encouraging to see that apart from a single day one test, which, given the infection rate in the UK, is to be expected, we have seen no additional positives at this stage. I do want to mention that we had some feedback that people would like us to present the test results in a way that more clearly separates results of the recent clusters from the more day-to-day, everyday testing. We agree and we are working on that now. While the results are good news, I do need to underline the fact that this is only the start of a period of uncertainty while we continue contact tracing and undertaking more testing to see the extent of any community spread. There is some way to go yet before we have a complete picture. At this point, I would like to hand over to our Director of Public Health for an update on this, Dr. Ewart.
Thank you, Chief Minister. Yes, as the Chief Minister and Minister Ashford said, we have been doing extensive testing with large numbers of tests over the last few days in response to the cluster. And it's extremely reassuring at this point to be able to say that the only positive in the last 24 hours was a day one travel. However, that really doesn't mean to say we can relax yet, because we are not through the incubation periods for either cluster so far. So the message there is to everybody who was identified as a low-risk contact, please keep on self-monitoring, please go on looking out for symptoms, and if you notice any, even if you think maybe they're not worth reporting, please do report them. Please do contact COVID 111 and discuss them with the team there, because they will be able to advise you whether a test is appropriate. And we're really taking the approach that if you have been in any of those venues, any symptoms makes it worthwhile testing. The risk we have here is that we still haven't closed off all the potential transmission chains from these clusters. And that means there is a risk that it is getting further out into the community under the radar. So I would like to say to everybody on island, even those who were nowhere near any of those venues and certainly haven't been identified as a high-risk contact, still please keep vigilant for the onset of any symptoms that could be COVID-related. And if you notice anything, please contact 111, because it's always possible that you could have been infected by someone who themselves remained completely asymptomatic, and so we wouldn't be able to pick you up through the case finding and contact tracing done through the cluster investigations. So that's just to remind everybody to stay vigilant and report symptoms if they notice them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Henrietta. And I know that the team have been working around the clock on this, so please pass on my thanks. And again, thank you to everyone who has come forward following our appeals over recent days. This is making a real difference. On the subject of making a difference, I would like to say something about our food retailers. They have yet again gone above and beyond to support our island at this difficult time. A number of retailers now have in place either dedicated shopping hours or are giving priority access for the island's elderly and for those who are supporting the most vulnerable. I would ask everyone to support this. If you see elderly and vulnerable members of our community and those shopping for them, please allow them access to the front of the queues. If you see anyone wearing a high-vis vest with Department of Health and Social Care support worker on, they are helping the most vulnerable of our society at this time. By allowing them access to the front of the queue, you will be helping a number of families who are unable to leave their homes during this lockdown. I mentioned yesterday the importance that our incredible community spirit will play in this new chapter. It is more important than ever to stay connected and look out for one another. Words like lockdown and isolation can make us feel that we are on our own, but we are not. If you or someone you know is struggling, then there are a lot of services out there that are still very much open for business. Our charitable sector was so important last spring and is again ready to help, and most government-run services are still available. Please do not hesitate to get in touch. Some might be run differently or no longer face-to-face, but video or phone options are often available and the help is still there. This very much includes emergency department and our mental health services. As we go through this circuit break period, please check in with your neighbours, friends and family. Ask them, are you okay? These simple three words, knowing that someone is out there, can make a big difference to the way they are feeling. Whilst this is a difficult time, it is another chance for us to show how strong our community is on this island. There are a range of resources out there. You can start at the Are You OK website, which you'll find at ruok.gov.im. You will also find their contact details for our partners at Cuth and Quell. Both offer online mental health and wellbeing support for children and adults. They can provide a safe place to discuss how you are feeling. Before I pause and take questions from the media, I want to pick up some queries which we have received from the public. We have asked parents to keep their children at home wherever possible and asked nursery playgroups and childminders to remain open only for those children who are designated as vulnerable or who are children of essential workers. A list of nurseries, playgroups and childminders who have remained open and have places available can be found on the Registration and Inspection Unit section of gov.im. This will be updated on a daily basis. On our civic amenity sites, Although these have not been directed by government to close, the relevant authorities have taken the decision to do so. This is so that appropriate measures to protect the public and their staff can be put in place. Government is working with the civic amenity sites so that they can reopen as soon as possible. The eastern and western civic amenity sites will reopen on the 15th of January. The northern civic amenity site is looking to open on the 20th of January, reintroducing its booking system. Government is working with the southern civic amenity site to reinstate the one-way road closure order, which was in place last year, and it is hoped that this will assist that site in being able to reopen. It is important to note that the island's Bring Bank network is still fully operational, and you can take glass cans and paper to these sites where they will be collected as normal. Finally, a reminder that dentists have not been mandated to close, although it is of course a matter for individual practices whether they operate or not. If you have an appointment over the next 3 weeks, please check with your dentist. And now to the media, and just to let you know that the Education Minister is here should you have any questions in that regard. And first I have Simon Richardson from Business 365. Good afternoon, Simon. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question, two arrests today for COVID breaches so far. Do you envisage higher levels of public disobedience the second time around?
I would hope not. I have heard about the two cases, but I obviously no detail yet. And even if there was detail, I wouldn't be able to discuss them, I'm afraid, because if they're going to be prosecutions, then that's between the police and the courts and the individuals concerned. But yeah, it's disappointing to hear that there's been two cases. But let's just hope that that's a temporary blip and we'll get back to the fantastic compliance that we've seen from all sectors of our island community.
And secondly, in terms of the Oxford vaccine, once it starts being distributed, could you confirm if it's planned to get local pharmacies involved?
Right, well, I'll bring in the Health Minister who's been working on this to give you an answer, Simon.
Thank you.
Hi, Simon. Yes, we have been speaking with not just local pharmacies, but also the GPs, because, as I think I've said before, the Oxford vaccine is much more logistically able to be moved around. So we are engaging with them. We need to get the final protocols in place, but we hope to have agreement that we can deliver at a primary care level for the Oxford vaccine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Simon. And now we move on to Helen McKenna from Alaman Newspapers. Good afternoon, Helen. Astonai.
Good afternoon, Ministers. So firstly, just to be clear, the lockdown is definitely not going to affect the vaccine rollout.
No, it isn't, Helen. Obviously, areas of high transmission, such as the UK, have a vaccine rollout. There's appropriate PPE and infection control protocols being put in place. We will still be sticking with our plan, and we will still, in the initial stages, until we have access to Oxford, when we can ramp up, be doing the 1,141, I think it is, per week.
Okay, thank you. Secondly, how is the Isle of Man Airport's vaccination plans for the hub going?
If I may, Chief Minister,
yes, David,
In terms of that, that is again on track. As we've said, we'll be using the hub for the later age groups for when people can travel. That is online. That is all ready to go online when those age groups come available in February.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much, Helen. Now we move on to Alex Bell from BBC Isle of Man. Good afternoon, Alex. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask a question of the Health Minister, please. Given the hope we had on Monday with the vaccine programme beginning, followed by the lockdown shock, it's been a mixed week. And I think yesterday people were fairly flabbergasted to hear that the vaccination programme has been effectively suspended till next week after just 3 days. Can you just run us through those logistical restraints that you listed? How do they affect the ability to give a vaccine for the other 4 days of the week?
Yeah, the first thing to say, Alex, is that it was always the plan that at this stage it would roll out. Well, the first logistical challenge is when you defrost a tray, you've got to use it as a whole, with Pfizer. So that means that if we go over the 975, or as it is now, I think it's about 1,141 you can get out of a tray, then basically you've got to use the whole of that second tray. So you've got to get people booked in. You've got to make sure they attend the appointment, because you do have people who don't attend. You also, though, have to review the clinical protocols. It's all very well having a large document saying this is how you handle the vaccine, but you've got to remember you're doing this in practice on the ground. So this is the first time this particular vaccine, and each vaccine is unique, has been handled. So we do have to pause after each time, review our processes, make sure they are patient safe and appropriate. And that's exactly what we're doing. So the plan was always that with the Pfizer vaccine and the logistics around that, that we would start off doing the one tray a week. And then from there, when the Oxford one became available, we would be able to build up onto a higher rollout.
Is this not just a case of the Isle of Man not getting enough trays to meet demand?
Well, hang on, no, we get our share of trays. And just to put it into perspective, by this time next week, we'll have vaccinated 2,782 individuals. That's the equivalent of just over, I think on my maths, it's 3.3% of the entire population. That's the equivalent of the UK doing just over 2 million vaccines. At the moment, I think there was a press report yesterday that says they've delivered 1.3.
So just to sort of reiterate, you don't think that the vaccines could be rolled out any faster than they're currently being?
No, because we cannot compromise patient safety and we cannot compromise clinical processes. As I said in the initial remarks, we've got to remember this isn't a production line, it's a medical process, and it must be done in a safe fashion with the clinicians happy that it is being done in that way. And we will be led by the medicine and the clinicians on this. We will not be led by just sheer rush of getting it out. It is a national priority to get the vaccine rolled out, but that does have to be done in a clinically safe way.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, Alex. We now move on to Sam Turton from Jeff the Mongoose. Good afternoon, Sam. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Fastamai. With the vaccine rollout, we've been inundated with people contacting us, and in some instances criticising the media for our action towards this. Are you certain that, not necessarily this is the right way forward, but that the public are with you on this? Because we look around, we see Jersey are rolling out quicker than we are, and Guernsey are going down the same route, and it just seems to be a lack of urgency that people are seeing this. And, you know, what? How is it that you can really reassure people that this is the right way forward?
Well, our delivery schedules are no different to the Channel Islands. The difference, one of the differences is Jersey has taken the decision that they are going to do a load of first doses and then they're going to have the gap of the 12 weeks. We are not going to do that. Our clinicians don't believe that is medically appropriate. The manufacturers, as I said in there, their guidance for us to actually have our manufacturer indemnity in place, we must follow the manufacturer's instructions, and that is for Pfizer 21 days and for Oxford 28 days. Our clinicians believe that is medically appropriate. So we must ensure that we have appropriate stock in place for those second doses to be delivered. It will not slow us down anymore. I believe Jersey is saying at the moment that they will have all their over 50s done in April. We're saying by May.
I think it's also important to point out that I think I read somewhere that the World Health Organization do not recommend that you go for any bigger gap than the three-week gap. So we are following World Health Organization rules and regulations. Jersey have made their own decision along with the United Kingdom, but Jersey and the United Kingdom are sadly in a far different situation than the Isle of Man finds itself in.
Thank you. And secondly, it's sort of the first point is just a bit of clarification. How many doses do we get of the Oxford vaccine? And then secondly, we've seen up in Ramsey, for instance, Andy Cowie has said about opening up vaccination hubs in, say, the old courthouse up there. Is that something that's also being looked at when we can roll that out?
In terms of vaccination hubs, we do have to be very careful about the logistics of this. We are looking at different options around widening it out, particularly with the Oxford one, which, like I say, is much more transportable. We certainly couldn't do that with the Pfizer. In terms of Oxford, they come in trays of, I think it's 700 to a tray. If you're talking about our overall entitlement, I think it's about 160,000 doses. So that's enough for about 80,000 people.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sam. Now we move on to Leanne Cook from 3FM. Good afternoon, Leanne. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. My first question is just for the Health Minister. I just wondered if any more information had been released on how long the COVID vaccinations last for. For example, how long someone is immune to coronavirus after they've had both doses.
There is no science around that, Leanne, because obviously it's a new vaccine. So that will be trial and error. We don't know yet. And I think the Director of Public Health, I'll bring her in a minute to speak on this, has previously said about it's going to be a wait and see. One of the things, though, it does give me an opportunity to say off the back of your question, is that one of the things that Pfizer has said, particularly as the manufacturer, that they are concerned about the idea of spreading the second dose out past 21 days, because in the words of the statement, joint statement themselves and BioNTech, who also developed the vaccine, they say there is no data to demonstrate that protection after the first dose is sustained after 21 days. So it is important that we actually do this right. I know there is some trial data that shows that people who've had two doses of the vaccine actually see a higher antibody response than those who've actually had the disease. So that is quite encouraging. But how long that lasts, we don't yet know. And I'll bring the Director of Public Health in case there's anything further she wishes to add.
Yes, there's not a lot to add there, really, because the Health Minister has given a comprehensive statement about the fact that we simply do not know how long protection lasts because we haven't had the time course to run to see that. And obviously that's something that is being very closely monitored. And the advantage now is that we will be able to monitor it in the real world situation, which often gives different data to that's purely from a trial situation. The other point just to pick up on was, I think your question said, how long does it give you immunity for? And we just need to unpack a bit what we might mean when we use the word immunity. What the vaccines do on the basis of the trial data that we have is protect the people who have been vaccinated from serious illness. We don't know yet whether it protects them from infection. We will know that over the coming weeks and months as further data accrues and some of the serological studies are done to see whether people who have had the vaccine go on to develop a reaction that indicates that they've had a COVID infection. But that's going to take time to accrue. So we just have to be a little bit careful about being clear what it is we know about these vaccines.
OK, thank you.
Thank you very much, Leanne. Right, next we have Paul Moulton from Isle of Man Television. Good afternoon, Paul. Fast am I.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. It's really for David, I think. Can you clarify exactly what you said there about you've got the Oxford vaccine, but you haven't got the paperwork signed off? If that's the case, could you have not previously signed off the paperwork? Do you have to wait until it actually arrived? And this is what's causing people, and it's certainly very much out there, people are worried that this could be done quicker, as we've already heard from other journalists.
Well, Paul, we can't sign off something we haven't got and we haven't seen. The protocols around the use of the vaccine have to come from the manufacturer and come through the UK. They have not been passed to us yet. We do not have the Crown indemnity either in place, which was required, as we discussed around the Pfizer vaccine, before we can do the rollout. As soon as we get those, and we hope they are imminent, then our clinical team will review. As with the last one with the Pfizer vaccine, they were signed off within days of us receiving the paperwork.
So you're getting signed off from the UK, whereas when the UK gets its vaccine, it gets signed off from somebody else. Have the other Crown dependencies done the same thing, or have they also just left it? They've just gone straight for the giving it out?
Well, in Jersey's case, I don't know about this case with Guernsey, but I know in Jersey's case, certainly with Pfizer, they decided to go ahead without the Crown indemnity and the protocols in place. But that was a decision for them. There is definitely a risk around that, because can't be certain you're handling it in line with the protocols, and you also obviously are not indemnified for anything that you do. But obviously, as the Chief Minister has just said, they are in a very different situation to us. We take the view that it is very important from a clinical point of view that we ensure everything is correct and everything is appropriate. We are a Crown dependency and government in our own right, which means our clinical teams, when the protocols arrive, need to sign them off, including, for instance, the medical director. That can be done very quickly once we receive it, but obviously we can't sign something off we haven't received.
And your indemnity is against the UK government, is it?
Yeah, so the UK government provides indemnity so that if, in a very unlikely circumstances, anything does go wrong, they will indemnify.
And they're willing to do that at some point?
Yes, yeah. I mean, that was an offer from the UK government. It is in place for the Pfizer vaccine. We are simply waiting for the Crown Indemnity around the Oxford to ensure that it is correct and it is legally appropriate.
Yeah, if I'm cutting there, Paul.
The other thing, you said these letters going out to the over 80s. How many people are we talking about here in that age group that will be getting these letters?
So if you bear with me, Paul, I'll tell you exactly. In relation to the over 80 years of age and over, I thought it might be an approximate figure, but it looks like it's exact. It's 4,397.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people.
Thank you.
Yeah, but we will get it done very quickly. It's also worth pointing out, Paul, regarding the indemnification, that if it's proven that you haven't followed the rules and regulations, should you have a problem in the future, then you will then be open to not receiving, you know, having the indemnification. It's just like any insurance policy. If you've done something that you shouldn't have done as part of rolling out this vaccination process, it's okay rushing in to be seen to be ahead for a few days. But if halfway through the process you find out you've done something wrong, the vaccine might have to be redone in some cases, which I'm sure will happen in other places. B, you may no longer be indemnified if something goes wrong. So I do believe it's really important we get this right. And in a very short period of time, we will have probably overtaken per capita the United Kingdom anyway. So I'm confident that we have got this right. Thanks very much, Paul. We will now move on to Tim Glover from Manx Radio. Good afternoon, Tim. Fast am I.
Fast am I. You've obviously asked the Manx public to lock down again, and like other media organisations, it's all about the speed of the vaccine rollout. I'm not going to go over old ground, but they're saying it's got the urgency of civic amenity sites and getting set up to reopen, in their view. Would it be worth being really transparent, as we are with test results, etc., about vaccines, having a table that's released daily of the number of vaccines given, number of vaccines on island, the timetable and changes to it, to bring the public on board?
Absolutely, Tim. We've already said we're going to do that. I don't know, David, if you want to.
Yeah, we've already committed to publicly do that, and we will. And we will also be putting out information in the coming days around the delivery schedule for the vaccines as well.
OK, how long will that take, sorry?
It will be in the next couple of days.
And just on the current cases that we've got, have any people presented differently to the previous time we had cases? Sicker later seems to be a theme.
Can we bring the Director of Public Health in on
Henrietta
that?
Henrietta.
Thank you. Yes, it's very difficult to make a valid comparison because small numbers always allow for variation just by chance. And also we have a difference here in that we are clearer about timelines when individuals were returning travellers. We know exactly what their movements were and the fact that they would not have been exposed here. They've imported the case. When we had widespread transmission on island, it was very difficult to be clear about the timelines for people. So we really can't say anything meaningful about whether things look as if they're different now than they were before. And I imagine some part of that question is actually tied up with, are we seeing any differences in behaviour with the new variant? On that one, I can say at the moment, as we know, we haven't had any of our genomic sequencing confirmed. It'll be interesting to review when we do. And within public health circles and infectious disease circles, there are anecdotal suggestions that maybe it presents differently. Actually, in that case, it looks as if the symptoms start sooner rather than later, which is a bit different from what we think we've seen here in the last two clusters. But at this stage, that is just anecdote. It needs sufficient numbers and sufficient analysis to see whether that's real or just a feeling that turns out to be not substantiated.
OK, thank you. Can I just get a clarification? I think the Health Minister said 1,141 vaccinations given, but the comms government's saying 1,041.
Right, we'll get the Health Minister back to come and give the clarification, Tim.
Thank you.
Yeah, I gave the exact figure in my speech, and the figure I've got in my speech, which was given to me by the department, was 1,141.
Should there be any difference to that, Tim? Obviously, if we put a press release out with 1,041, then we will clarify that. but at the moment it's 1,141. Thanks very much, Tim. We now move on to Josh Stokes, last but not least, at ITV Granada. Good afternoon, Josh. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question for the Health Minister, please. Like other representatives of the media, I've had many queries regarding the vaccination programme. So, first of all, do you plan to change the weekly or monthly targets for vaccinations, given you've already exceeded your original target of 975 per week and the Oxford vaccine is hopefully fast approaching? And do you have an initial idea of what you'd like those projections to be?
Yep, so we will be scaling up, as I said, with the Oxford vaccine. So the plan with the Oxford vaccine initially is it will be in a, on top of the 5-1, there'll be in a tray of Oxford as well. So that will be 700 above where we are now. And then we'll go from there, basically. In terms of the 5-1, the reason we've been able to exceed our target is that the stated protocols originally said that you would get 5 doses out of a vial. We've actually managed to get 6. Which is what has actually allowed us to deliver more.
OK, and in terms of the Oxford vaccine, is there any sort of timeline as to when you hope to receive that vaccine on the island?
Well, we've got the vaccine. We've got the very first tray. As I stated in my speech, we're waiting on the protocols and the Crown Indemnity from the UK. Once we have those, our clinical team will work swiftly, I'm sure, to sign that off. And from there, we will start rolling out the Oxford vaccine. The first recipients will be the nursing home recipients, because it is a lot more logistically easy to move the Oxford vaccine. And nursing home recipients obviously need to be done on site.
So is there any idea of when that indemnity may be signed off in terms of a timeline for that,
or a hope
that you'd like it to be signed off?
Well, if, as expected, we receive it in the next few days from the UK, I would expect us to sign it off within 48 to 72 hours later, assuming there's not any issues with the protocols or the indemnity.
OK, thank you. And my second question, you've appealed to volunteers to come forward to be trained to administer the vaccine. Can you just tell us a bit about what the uptake has been like on that?
Well, I can speak of the uptake of people who contacted me. I've had quite a lot of people come via me. There is an address. I'll just put it out there again. A good opportunity. Thank you, Josh. That if anyone does wish to volunteer, the email address they can contact is lead@gov.im. In terms of, I believe we've had, I think, about 60 volunteers, I think, in total. I personally have had about 10 people contact me. But if anyone still wishes to volunteer, like I say, the email address is lead@gov.im. That's lead@gov.im.
And in terms of staffing, you're happy at the moment with the amount of people you have ready to administer the vaccine?
Yes, we have it fully staffed up, and we have staffing ratios going all the way through to September.
OK, thank you.
Thanks very much, Josh, and thank you all for your questions. Tomorrow I hope to be joined by the Treasury Minister, who will give you an update on work to support our businesses and our economy through the circuit break lockdown. Until then, thank you again for joining us, and thank you for everything you are doing. Please remember the basics. Stay at home as much as you possibly can. If you need to go out, then wear a face covering as much as you possibly can. If you have any symptoms, then stay at home and call 111 as soon as you possibly can. Make the right decisions to keep you, your family and your island safe, to protect what we have achieved, and this time to protect our vaccination programme. Stay safe, be responsible, and whenever you can, please stay at home. Thank you very much.